to Toxic Free Talk Radio. We're doing a 12-hour marathon today to celebrate the release of my new book, Toxic Free. I've been here since noon Eastern time, and I'm going till midnight tonight. And we are now in hour number 9. We have 4 hours left. Hour number 9, and our guest in this hour is Dr. Kirk Youngman, who is a biologic dentist. And while we're waiting for Dr. Youngman to call in, I'll just tell you that my book, Toxic Free, I'm very excited about it. I've been writing, as some of you know, I've been writing about toxic chemicals and their health effects and what we can do to reduce our exposure to them at home for almost 30 years. And what's different about this book is that I have now added another element. We now know that toxic chemicals are in everybody's bodies. They've been associated with every illness there is. And we also know how to get them out of our bodies as well as our homes now. And that's what my book is about. It's the complete solution to toxic chemicals so that you can be well and healthy and happy. And I see we have Dr. Youngman on the line now, so I'm just going to go straight to him. Hi, Dr. Youngman. This is Deborah. You're on the air.
Well, fantastic, Deborah. Thanks for letting me talk.
Thank you. So I actually have only met Dr. Youngman very briefly, but he's just become partners with my dentist, Dr. Ray Bem in Clearwater, who has the business Natural Dentistry. Dr. Youngman is now a partner, and you're here from California, aren't you?
That's right. I practiced in California for 27 years outside of San Francisco, and had a practice that was also biologic and non-mercury.
I think when I was looking for your picture online, you were in Danville, right?
Correct. That's exactly where I was.
I grew up in Concord, so we were neighbors.
Is that right?
Yes, I spent age 7 to 22 in Concord, California.
Well, what year? I grew up in Walnut Creek.
Wow.
From 1956.
Oh, well, that was a little earlier than me. I was born in 1955.
Oh, okay. Well, I was a year ahead of you.
Yeah.
You moved there when I was 2 years old.
So,
what
well,
a small world.
Yeah, well, we had lots of small worlds. In the last hour, I was talking to Ellen Edmondson, and she got interested in permaculture because she went to a permaculture site that I actually knew the woman who introduced her to permaculture. And here we are at the other end of the country and had a similar experience in California. So this is great. All right,
yeah.
Now, my first question for you is, were you a regular dentist before you were a biologic dentist?
Well, you know, I can't say I was ever a regular dentist, but I definitely, before I got into this in 1994, I wasn't enlightened on the whole mercury issue.
Well, tell me, what was it in your life, what was your personal aha moment that made you decide that you wanted to be a biologic dentist and not a toxic dentist?
Well, first of all, the reason I wasn't is because I hadn't considered myself a toxic dentist. And I actually, it was in 1990, and Hal Huggins had spoken on 60 Minutes. I think a lot of people saw that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, before the show was over practically, we had damage control fact sheets shipped to us from the ADA to answer everybody's questions. And I got out of school in 83. I'd been in the public health service until 1989, and which then a friend of mine, he was in a bad car accident. I took over his practice. So I was really kind of in a sheltered environment, not in private practice there for a long time. So when I got in private practice and then I had this fact sheet and I was all ready to say the things that the AD wanted to say because I hadn't looked, and that's the biggest reason dentists aren't non-toxic is because they never looked. I didn't ever inspected the real data. I just told everybody what I was told. But anyways, a gentleman was in my chair, and he said, what about these mercury fillings? And I said, oh, well, you know, the mercury's all locked up in the fillings and it doesn't actually come out. And that was in 91, and actually it turns out in 84 the Dental Association finally admitted it does come out, but that shows you how poorly that information was even disseminated to us in the rank and file. But anyways, my patient then said to me, I'm sorry?
I'd just like to interject. You know, I think it's this week, or maybe it was last week, is National Mercury Awareness Week.
Ends tomorrow.
So.
Oh, wait a minute. Dentistry National Awareness Week. You mean,
Mercury.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I saw a video that I'd actually seen before that anybody could look up on YouTube. I think it's called Smoking Teeth.
Yeah, Smoking Tooth.
Smoking Tooth. And if you've never seen that, if you've got mercury fillings and you've never seen that, you should go look and see it because you can see the mercury vapors coming off the filling.
And actually anybody that actually wants to talk to their dentist about this needs to be aware that the only people that can't see that smoke are dentists, because just today I was on an email forum of dentists who are still can't comprehend that video. One guy was trying to say it was water vapor coming off the person's hands or off the actual tooth structure, or it's coming off of something coming off of the eraser. I mean, it's just phenomenal what they come up with. And so it's just, if someone was to see that and see it as obvious and expect to talk to their dentist about it and have him understand that, even if he's seen the video, it is actually flabbergasting how dentists, who I've even heard today, who are bright guys, who are trying to, you know, how do we know that's real is what they're asking. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think that there are people like you and me and a lot of my readers who we have our own experiences, and so toxic chemicals exist and they're real and they make people sick is really real to us. And there are many, many people in the world that just don't get it yet.
Well, it's true, but the funny part is, too, that dentists know, and it's been told, the American Dental Association says it, that if you put friction on these teeth, if you heat these teeth, if you drill on these teeth, more mercury vapor is going to come off. When somebody rubs that tooth and heats that tooth and vapor comes off, even the American Dental Association, there should be no disagreement that actually is mercury vapor coming off those teeth.
Yeah. Well, it takes a while for some people to get it. Anyway, so I interrupted you, so go ahead. So you...
Oh, that's okay, and I didn't want to make a long story. My patient, though, said to me that, you know, this isn't an ionic mixture, because I used to give an analogy and tell people that the mercury locked in there was compared to table salt, where you have sodium, which is a caustic metal, and you have chlorine, which is a poisonous gas, and you put them together, and aha, you have table salt. Well, the thing is that is actually very poor chemistry on my part, because sodium chloride, just like H2O water and just like O2 oxygen, has what's called an ionic bond, which is the strongest chemical bond in chemistry. It's pretty hard to bust two oxygens apart, and it's pretty hard to bust oxygen off of water. So that's not how mercury is held together, but that's how I was telling people, and how he told me is it's actually it's like mixing vinegar or oil and vinegar together. You know, I mean, it's like, yes, they mix up, but they're not separate in there. And there's a word for it, a chemical word called a eutectic mixture. So he told me it's a eutectic mixture like that, and I just went, wow, I don't remember what that word means. And just by him telling me that and actually doing it in a very scientific manner, I started to look, and I think within days I wrote for Hal Huggins' book. I read It's All in Your Head. I signed up for his course. I went there, and now I was in a room with about 25 dentists, all who were like-minded and on mercury, and some guys a lot longer than me. And that was kind of my aha moment, because then I looked and I go, wow, there's a lot of guys that think this way. And I sat through the lectures and was amazed that I hadn't known this, and the book made sense, and for me at that point there was no turning back.
So then what's the difference between like being a dentist who is, let's call it, a mercury-free dentist and a biologic dentist? I have this idea that that a biologic dentist is more than no mercury filling?
You know, it's there's a lot of different kind of nuances to it, but the main ones people would want to be aware of, because right now every cosmetic dentist or every guy that stopped putting in mercury fillings to do white fillings call himself a non-mercury dentist. And the majority says they take absolutely no precautions, like a mercury hygiene, to protect the patient, protect themselves. Just because they're not putting back in mercury films, they call themselves non-mercury. And yet it's just as, you know, the danger taking them out is just as much, say, as putting them in, because you're going to get, you know, there's the potential for more exposure if, you know, some very stringent guidelines aren't followed.
Uh-huh.
And so you have that right there, where there you have someone who then who's the next step of non-mercury, where then he's going to actually use a rubber dam. And then that guy, he, you know, he's better than the guy that doesn't. But then you have guys who are getting into more biological, and I'll just make a giant leap, where now they're putting charcoal under the rubber dam to actually absorb the mercury. They're using a extra high-speed suction volume, like as much as your, what does that call when you have indoor vacuuming? What's that called? Where you plug it into the wall?
Oh, yeah.
And we have heavier vacuum like that, and even ones that are as big as a, you know, we call them like an elephant trunk that we put right under a patient's chin, which then goes through another charcoal, so that you're actually, you're increasing the amount of suction, because all we really are concerned about mostly is the vapor. With the rubber dam, we control particles or drilling it out, but the vapor is what we want to control. And then having people on oxygen, we have their head covered, so, you know, the water spray doesn't go up in the air and all land back down in their head, which our head is the most absorptive thing in our body. And then there's also using the liaisoning, or doing it in one's own office, where you're using different supplements, or we'll send someone to a naturopath or a doctor to detox people or use different supplements and nutrients that are actually going to take the even vitamin C and IV vitamin C to take the mercury out, chelate it out of the body. Once
mm-hmm.
you're getting into that level, or and then also testing the materials for toxicity or muscle testing people and things of the kinesiology, it just kind of jumps up higher and higher. So when you're a biologic dentist, it covers a lot more than just being non-mercury or mercury-free.
Yeah. So if you've taken the mercury out of somebody's teeth, then what do you put in for the filling? What are the options?
Well, there's...
I don't have any fillings myself. I've never had a cavity.
Well, you know, and then, of course, that leads you right into the next controversy, because Contra Costa County, where you grew up in Concord, and I did in Walnut Creek, has been fluoridated since the 50s. So there was someone will make the argument that it's fluoridated water, but not necessarily true.
The other side of it is that I grew up on fluoridated water. I have had pretty bad thyroid problems, and I'm now detoxing the fluoride out of my thyroid.
Wow. And like I said, that's the next topic of toxicity without a doubt. And even factually, that's why I was saying tongue-in-cheek about the decay, because I'm like you. I had I had one filling by the time I was 20, and everybody goes, oh, you grew up with fluoride. But my older brother, decay, crowns, root canals, my younger brother, crowns, fillings, and one was 2 years older and one's 2 years younger, and we all drank the same water. So it's,
yeah, my brother too. My brother had a lot of dental work, and I had none.
Well, there
so
you go.
Must be special.
That's right. And he drank the same water. So this is where the breakdown on the fluoride thing. But anyways, but you asked me, I actually forgot what you asked me.
What are the least toxic filling materials?
You know, there's some, you know, debate to that, because, you know, even Hal Huggins was using a certain kind of metal filling that was called Holostor, which was considered very non-toxic. But then really where we're leaning in all this is to be non-metal, you know, because we don't want any current in the mouth. And so if we're going to go non-metal, then what we have is we have porcelains and we have plastics. And the plastics are really combinations of glass particles and plastic resin. And so then, of course, we do have one porcelains that doesn't have aluminum in it, because then that was always the, you know, we talk about porcelains and then people talk about aluminum, and we couldn't use any of that. So our choices became narrower and narrower. We would do compatibility reports where you would do a blood drawn test. It was one way that we'd start with. And, you know, when you'd use Huggins, it would have very few materials as far as, but they would be plastics. And, you know, we had another one that was used that called Clifford, which would have a broader spectrum of approved ones. And then, for instance, in Rays, then you could start off and take those and even narrow them down with kinesiology. But in answer to your question, we call plastics or composites, which are a combination of glass and resin. And then the porcelains, and we have one that is aluminum-free. And with the plastics, of course, then the big, you know, worry, and rightly so, with the BIS GMAs, and we have a few composites that do not have BIS GMA in them, but then you'd hear the chemical makeup of those, and that would sound not too great either, but they test good, right? And those are kind of all we have, because I have had patients, I don't want composites, and I don't want porcelain, and I don't want anything metal, and I'm kind of like, you know, I kind of run out of tools in my tool belt at that point in time.
Yeah. So when you put false teeth in people's, like, an implant or something, what are those teeth made out of?
Well, the implants themselves, for the lion's share, are titanium. And there are some coming around now which are being used, but on a much less basis is zirconium. And so there's more of a hope that the zirconium is going to be somewhat more compatible, but again, the lion's share, 99% of them out there, if you're going to get implants, is going to be titanium. And from a biologic point of view, putting a metal titanium screw in your jawbone that then communicates with the oral cavity is not considered very much of a biologic solution.
Okay, I have one of those. Is that impacting my health?
Well, I couldn't say whether it is or not. You know, you'd have to be tested. And there's a one metal test that's very, it's called a MELISA test. I don't know if you've heard of that or not.
No, uh-uh.
It's MELISA, MALISA. And that's considered kind of a world-renowned test, which tests for impact or allergenicity to metals. And so that one, you know, even whether it's gold or titanium, that one would be worthwhile getting. And then I do think there are some practitioners who could evaluate that for you to see if it is or if it isn't.
Okay, good. We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back in 15 seconds. Toxic-Free Talk Radio with Deborah Lindad and Dr. Kirk Youngman, who is a biological dentist. We're here doing a marathon of 12 hours of Toxic-Free Talk Radio in celebration of the release of my book, Toxic-Free. And you can go to my website, Deborah Non-Toxic, that's DeborahNontoxic.com. And find out more about how to live toxic-free and how to get my book. So, back to Dr. Youngman. Tell us about fluoride. Let's talk about fluoride.
Well, fluoride is rather a complex topic, and especially when one gets to, you know, all the different ways that it's come about into our environment. But the main thing about fluoride is that it's a, you know, it's basically like a prescription that's being prescribed everywhere with no prescription and with no evaluation of a patient, which is kind of a violation of FDA's protocols, because you're getting it in toothpaste and in the water, and so basically everyone's being medicated without any evaluation by a doctor. And so that's sort of a global kind of look at it, where right there should be no reason for it. But the other thing is it's a very, very potent enzyme interrupter for different, which would be stopping reactions in the body, and it's incredibly active in that regard. And the other is that there's a lot of misinformation about it, where people will talk about natural fluoride. And if you're familiar with, like, you know, solubility, let's say, if someone wanted to get an iron supplement, then, you know, sucking on a rusty nail wouldn't be the best way to get it, right?
Right.
It's not very soluble.
Right.
And fluoride in the environment is like a calcium fluoride, so if it's 2% or something. But the fluoride with these silicates from the fertilizer industry that they're putting in is 100 times more soluble than the calcium fluoride that people see naturally.
Okay, so let's just stop right there so that we can an idea of what that means for your body. So calcium fluoride that exists naturally is like in a rock or something. It's a mineral, isn't
that's right.
it?
And that's right.
So it would rain on the deposit in a mountain somewhere, and it would trickle down into some water supply. And isn't that how they discovered that fluoride would help reduce tooth decay? Is because there was a natural occurrence of fluoride in a community.
In higher amounts than in other areas. That's
right. In higher amounts than other areas, yeah. So the fluoride that we have, let me interrupt myself. So in the toothpaste, is that calcium fluoride or sodium fluorosilicate?
Yep, it's a silicate, and it's a sodium fluoride, which is, again, much more soluble.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I want everybody to get this now, okay? Now, fluorosilicate, this is a byproduct of the fertilizer industry. This is like hazardous waste, and it's got in it like lead and arsenic and all of these things that they really can't dispose of because it's hazardous waste.
And it's so hazardous that when it's being trucked to be put into our water, it actually has to be trucked in the most highly regulated tankers that they make because how caustic it is, and it would just eat through anything else.
Yeah. Okay, so this is what is being put in our water and in our toothpaste. And there's no warning label. There's a warning label on the toothpaste that says don't swallow this stuff. And there's no warning label on the tap, on the faucet that says don't swallow this water.
Well, not only that, but even what I just read or got recently from a website from another dentist that actually lectures on this, is when they say only use a pea-sized amount of toothpaste on your toothbrush, which almost no one does. You see the commercials, and it looks like a big frosty cone on that toothbrush.
Yeah, you spread it. You take toothpaste, and you put it all over the length of the brush.
That's right. That's right, which is now about five times as much as is regulated.
Oh, my God.
Or that they recommend. And then it says if you swallow that pea-sized amount, to call the Poison Control Center immediately. And what Dr. Osmondson said is that the amount of water in one glass of water of one part per million is the same amount of fluoride that's in that pea-sized amount that they tell you to go to the Poison Control Center immediately. One glass of water.
Wow, that's really important to know.
It's shocking.
Wow. Oh, my God. And you and I were drinking that all through our childhood.
That's right. And then hot weather, you're drinking more, right? No bottled water back then. That's all we drank.
You know, I remember when I was, what year was it, 1978 or something like that. I wanted to go on a fast because I was having all these toxic reactions and food allergies. And I wanted to go on a fast. And I knew that I needed to have some water, and it made sense to me. This was when I first started understanding about chemicals. So it made sense to me that I shouldn't be drinking tap water on a fast. And I couldn't, the only water that I could buy was Perrier. That was it. That was all that existed then. And that had, so bottled water had just come on the market. I had my choice of Perrier or club soda. And I was trying to figure out which is the better one to go on a fast. And so all I did was drink Perrier for 5 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
And all that carbonation and carbonic acid.
Yeah. And so we didn't have choices about water to drink when we were kids growing up in Contra Costa County. We had, you could buy distilled water in the plastic bottle.
Right. But I don't know that anybody did that.
No, I mean, no, you wouldn't drink that. That was for iron. Yeah.
Yeah, and plus people called that dead water, like there's something which didn't exactly, wasn't a very good marketing tool for that.
No. So, is it any wonder that people are sick?
Well, you know, and that's one thing that I think is so overlooked and so, oh, gosh, I mean, I don't even want to say, but it's like they go, well, these people aren't getting sick. And, you know, I had a patient of mine one time. She asked me, she worked for Chevron. She was a very bright woman. And she said, you know, Dr. Mann, I understand you stand on fluoride, but how much can I give my daughter for her teeth, right? And if I said, and then I told her, I said, if I told you that arsenic was really good for your daughter's teeth in really small amounts, I said, how much would you give her? She goes, she didn't even blink. She just said, I got it. Subject over. I completely understand now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But fluoride isn't seen as that kind of thing, and it is. It's one of the poison, that's the word I want. It's one of the most powerful enzyme poisons that exist. Like a enzyme makes a chemical reaction happen. We have enzymes in our body. That's what makes everything work. So if it poisons an enzyme, it stops the reaction. That's what it's most potent for, and that's what it did as a rat poison when the 50s, when sodium fluoride was the most common rat poison, because that's what it did. It poisoned enzymes and killed the rats.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I don't know if this is too heavy for the show or not, but...
No, it's okay. It's okay. What we need to do is we need to tell the truth. We need to... I don't want people to feel overwhelmed, but people need to know what's going on so that we can say... so that we can choose something different. If we just all walk around not knowing what the danger is, then we can't choose, make the better choice.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, so let's have some good news. Tell us something good.
Something good?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter, even if we talk about materials like plastic or porcelains, I mean, the truth of the matter is that here the mercury is the most toxic metal on the planet that's not radioactive. So this stuff people will ask me, well, maybe we'll find out 40 years from now that the plastics are just as bad. And I'm sort of like, how's that even possible, right? The only worst thing we could be putting in people's mouths is plutonium, right? And so when we look at this, we have been using plastics, the non-mercury that Hal Huggins was doing from the 60s, and all the non-mercury and biologic dentists that have been working with people have been getting better. People who are sick have been getting better. People who had all kinds of things have been feeling better, you know, and just in case the American Dental Association is listening, you know, I can say all these things are anecdotal stories, but these people felt sick, they feel better, they were happy. So the good news is that with the materials we're using and the steps we're taking, people go from not feeling well to feeling better.
Well, I think that that's what matters to people. I think that certainly I could tell everybody my anecdotal story, and I've been telling it for 30 years, but I identified that there were toxic chemicals in my home that apparently were making me sick, and when I removed them, my health got better. And I've been continuing to live without them and decreasing my exposure more and more, and now have started removing toxic chemicals from my body, and I feel better and better and better, and my body functions better. And so it seems likely to me that that would be true for other human bodies as well.
Exactly. And I mean, and I've tried to think of analogies, and I just had an epiphany as I'm sitting here listening, is because I don't think the medicine has done double-blind studies on heroin or LSD to actually then prove in an article in the JAMA Journal of the Medical Association, that heroin has been shown to be bad for people. I don't think that article's been there. But I don't think so. And I think we take that as like, obviously not. That's a bad drug that makes addiction and everything else. I don't think there's been double-blind studies that create alcoholics and show that people who drink get liver disease and people who don't drink. I don't think they've actually done double-blind studies where they fed some person alcohol and another person a placebo. For one thing, I don't know how you could and get away with it, right?
Yeah.
But with the studies, they, you know, the points they want to make, like I was at a meeting the other night on acupuncture, and the woman who was talking was an MD and actually trained in acupuncture and was pro-acupuncture. But the interesting thing, she was talking about how medicine, because they said this study worked and that study worked. But the fact of the matter is, she said that it has been shown medically to, you know, lessen nausea. It's been shown to increase white blood cell counts. It's been shown to increase endorphin response. And it's been shown to increase blood flow. All these things they did. She talked about, you know, chemotherapy, we all know, kills cells, almost kills people. We take them to the brink of death, and that was her exact words, hoping we kill the cancer before we kill the patient.
Yeah.
And then I sort of spoke up, and I go, geez, I don't think this is like any kind of a genius kind of a conclusion here, but it sounds to me like acupuncture stimulates life, drugs stimulate death, from what you're telling me here.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, she sort of looked at me with a blank look on her face, but it was like, I mean, how do you see this any differently? Because then they even stop acupuncture when someone's at the terminal ends of cancer, because they're afraid the needles are going to cause an infection.
Oh, God.
It's the most ludicrous logic I've ever heard in my whole life.
Yeah.
But that's what we're kind of looking at when we're kind of looking at the dentistry part of it, too, because I actually have a communication into a dentist who I went through UCLA's TMJ and facial pain program, which even this part about bites and things like that and how that affects it with root canals. And this guy was incredible, as I felt, as far as conscientious and thorough in everything he did. I was like 3 years out of school. And later on, he became a president of the California Dental Association. And I saw him in the journal speaking out about in defense of mercury with defenseless statements like, you know, we've used it for 100 years, and it's ridiculous for people to think we're deceptive because we call it silver fillings. I mean, just no science. I mean, this has nothing to do with the actual topic. And then just recently, same thing with the way we handle temporal mandibular pain with bites and headaches and all this other stuff. And he's part of a group that's trying to actually, I should say, outlaw all this stuff. And their stand on temporal mandibular joint pain and headaches and all this stuff is basically to handle it psychopharmaceutically, behavioral therapy and drugs, and just let it run its course. So I finally, actually just a few days ago, wrote him a very serious and interested communication, you know, that I do respect his opinion and had over the years, and I wanted to know how he came up to these conclusions, because when we're trying to help a patient, and unfortunately I haven't received anything back from him yet. He's actually instructing at USC right now also to kind of tell you how that went. But I have done this with a few other dentists, one who wrote a newsletter, and they absolutely refuse to look at this. And the amount of patients that I hear that a dentist argued with them, called them stupid. I had a patient who went to one doctor, and he said, if you think mercury fillings are causing your problem, you need to be on Prozac. And it goes on and on. So
yeah.
The thing is, if anybody really wants to find someone to help them, you really do need to look. Because I even had a patient one time who told me her dentist was a really nice guy. And I was a nice guy when I was putting in mercury fillings. I was just stupid. But I was a conscientious, good dentist trying to do a good job, but I just didn't know and wasn't looking. But if they go to a dentist who's their dentist and he goes, well, I'll take him out for you if you want, that's still not the right guy, because he's not going to take all the precautions. And if something goes wrong with a tooth, you know, ends up needing a root canal or something like that, he's just going to shake his head and go, well, you know, I told you that wasn't a good idea. He's not an advocate for you.
So how do people – there's a Biological Dentists Association or something, right? What's it called? How would people find a dentist like you in their area? How many of them are you across the country? And what should people be looking for to get a doctor who's more holistically oriented and will do it right?
Well, you said a couple different words, and so there's a couple different societies. There's like one called the Holistic Dental Society, and then there's another called the Biologic Dentist Society.
And what's the difference between those two terms?
Well, interesting enough, and I'll let you know as I finish off the last and biggest one here, which is it's called the International Association of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, abbreviated IAOMT. Now, that organization came about because these guys wanted to go, look, no one's even going to listen to us unless we show science. And so their mantra is show me the science. And so these are the guys, it's the biggest group, and they're going up against the FDA, and they're publishing studies, and they're putting everything out there on the, what is that called, press releases. But they're just, you know, where if you took Hal Huggins, he says he cures people with MS, and he doesn't have anything he can show for it, and so he would get in trouble. And then expect anybody else to hang their hat on that, you're not going to do so well. So IMOT is the biggest and the most out there in the front. And when you get to the biologic and the holistic, you know, unfortunately, even in this area of dentistry, you have dentists and they're people and they're human beings with, you know, different viewpoints. And so we actually do have, even in this area, you know, controversies within our own groups, right?
Yeah.
And there are some that felt all root canal teeth need to be extracted, bar none, they just have to come out. Then there was a more holistic material that came out, BioCalyx, it was also called Endocal, which would then create an alkaline environment and say be better. And then so some guys like that in one group, but in the other group they're going, no, that's still horrible. So there was still that kind of political infighting, unfortunately, and you're going to have different viewpoints. And then you'll have one guy who's doing it completely different all on his own, but they're all actually trying to solve a problem and do the right thing, but there are going to be nuances like that, so there's some basic things people should just ask when they look for a dentist. You know, they want to know if you wanted me to say what those are.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, and the IMOT even has a list, but it's, you know, it's like using a rubber dam. And then there's latex allergies who also have a non-latex rubber dam. And then there's using alternative suctions, you know, like, and then there's, you know, in a large air unit. And then there's using, you know, oxygen. And the other thing we'll do is, like, what I used to do is when you take out all the mercury fillings, then you take off that rubber dam because the rubber's all, you know, peppered with particles all over it, which all emit vapor. So it's taking that off, cleaning them off completely, the patient, changing everything out, and then putting a new rubber dam on and now putting in the composites. If someone else just continued to use the same rubber dam, it might take you an hour to put all the fillings in, and the whole time you've got vapor coming off that rubber dam the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's kind of thinking that through just a little bit. So you have that, the suction. Keep an extra water spraying on it. Because factually, if we could keep the temperature down on these things the whole time and they never heated up, well, you wouldn't have any more increased mercury vapor at all off of these things. So I'll have our assistants spraying water at the same time we're drilling. We want to keep it cool. That's the biggest thing. And then, you know, the other things we add, like, you know, putting something over their head and actually even their nose and face till we take the metal out. You know, some people it's a little claustrophobic. You know, other people are just fine. But the whole point is to protect the patient, right, not to do some preconceived thing we're doing. And then, like, the charcoal underneath the rubber dam, fantastic thing that we do. I just actually even got, there's a cream that's made, and I think it's for some kind of industrial work, that we can rub on the rubber dam, and that also absorbs, you want stuff that absorbs the mercury vapor. But the main things that you'll hear is the rubber dam, the additional suction, extra water spray. You try to cut it out in big pieces so there's less cutting, actually, versus trying to pulverize the whole thing out. And, I mean, if a guy knows all that stuff, you've probably got a guy that pretty much kind of knows what he's doing.
Good. All right. We've got to take a break now, and then we'll be back after the break, and we'll talk about all the positive, good, healthy things that you can do to take care of your teeth and gums.
All right.
Jefferlyn Dad, we're back and on toxic free talk radio. Obviously, I've been here for a while. We're doing a marathon today from noon to midnight to celebrate the release of my book, Toxic Free. And I've been here, we're now in hour number 9. We've got another 3 hours to go, and I'm still sitting up. It's because I am living a very toxic-free life and don't have a lot of toxic chemicals in my home, and I'm working on getting the toxic chemicals out of my body, and it gives me more energy, and I'm feeling good. So if you'd like more information about my book, Toxic Free, you can go to my website, DebraNonToxic.com. That's DebraNonToxic. And we're going to be doing this radio show every week and have lots of information on how we can be living without toxic chemicals in our homes and how to remove them from our bodies. And right now we're going to go back to our interview with Dr. Kirk Youngman, dentist, biological dentist. And Dr. Youngman, tell us what we should be doing that is natural and toxic-free to care for our teeth.
Well, you know, I was thinking about during the break, and actually one of the really the first things, and this may sound a little odd, but it's awareness level. Because we'll get some people who, well, I've had my mercury fillings for 10 years, and I kind of want to take them out one at a time, and I don't feel sick. I'm really healthy, and I do a lot of good things, right? And so, and that's where it was something earlier we were talking about, which kind of makes this so hidden because it's kind of like that arsenic and old lace. Someone actually takes a little bit every day, and they start to get sick or have symptoms, and sometimes dismiss them as, oh, the reason I have a headache today is because. And it's sort of like if you lived in a room with lead paint or mercury, and mercury used to be in the paint. I mean, how long do you want to breathe in that? And so it's really the awareness that, like, recognizing that this stuff is what it is, and you need to be proactive about it and not wait to get sick because, you know, I mean, just like I kind of got from what you were talking about with your health, it's a lot harder coming back than it is never getting
there. It is much harder coming back, and that was part of my own personal epiphany all those years ago, that when I saw that I could regain my health and my symptoms would go away by getting away from the toxic chemicals that I could identify were causing them, my first thought was, oh, my God, I need to tell everybody that there are these toxic chemicals that are in your home because this is a preventable condition. I think that all of these things that we call illnesses are not even illnesses. I believe that they're conditions because they're the result of exposure to toxic chemicals. And if you remove the toxic chemicals and the condition goes away, you've just improved the condition. And so, like, another thing that's going on in my body is I have, well, my primary health doctor, Dr. Steve Lend, who we interviewed earlier today, twice, actually, he won't even say that I'm diabetic. He says I'm dysglycemic. I love that word. Because my blood sugar is elevated, but I've done everything that there is to do. I've taken all the cinnamon pills and the drugs and all that kind of stuff, and it's still not handled. And it's because I finally figured out for myself that I have all this whole history of being exposed to endocrine disruptors, and what's called diabetes is an endocrine condition. And what I'm working on is restoring my endocrine system, because every single thing that's wrong with my body all belongs to the endocrine system, including my thyroid, of course.
Right.
So the thyroid affects all these different things, and this is one of the reasons why I'm doing this thyroid cleanse, to get the fluoride and the bromine out of my thyroid gland so it can actually function, because until I do that, I could do every treatment there is in the world, and it's not going to make my blood sugar be normal. It just won't.
That's exactly right. And so, if we look at go ahead.
Well, I wanted to say, by the same token, if somebody has, like, my question in my mind when I asked you the question after the break was, how should we be caring for our teeth? And it sounded like the answer that you were giving me had to do with mercury fillings. And I went, oh, well, yeah, from a toxic viewpoint, I've been saying a lot that where we are now is that we're exposed to so many toxic chemicals that you can take all the vitamins you want and the toxic chemicals are still suppressing your health. So I suppose, likewise, that if you have mercury fillings in your mouth and we know that they're emitting mercury vapors, and that mercury is the most toxic metal that there is, that you could be, you know, brushing with the purest toothpaste and using exactly the right mouthwash, and you're still being affected in a toxic way as long as you have that mercury in your mouth. So from a dental viewpoint, probably the number one thing to do is first get the mercury out of your mouth if you have it. I guess I'm not thinking that way because I never had it there to begin with.
Interesting, right. Yeah, because you haven't, and if you haven't had that, that's right. And cause, and the reason I say that, too, is because pretty much from what you said is that how long does it take for our endocrine system to go down? How long does it take for our thyroid to be affected?
A lot of years.
That's right. And even our body, the way it's set.
32 years before my thyroid, you know, had
exactly.
a problem.
Exactly.
And I don't know when the thyroid problem started. I mean, I've always been, I was born a little chubby, but, you know, my mother had DDT in her body when she was carrying me. So, you know, I don't know when it started. But I didn't actually have the identifiable symptoms that made me go on a thyroid supplement till I was about 30 years old. But I'm sure that my endocrine system was disrupted long before that. Yeah,
exactly.
So we do have now mercury fillings where somebody is getting like a time release dose of mercury every day.
The hotter the coffee they drink, the more gum they chew, the more they're getting.
Yeah. So that does seem to be the first thing. So let's assume somebody like me who doesn't have mercury fillings either because we never had cavities or because we've had our mercury fillings removed. Now, what's the best way for us to care for our teeth and gums?
Okay. And I just wanted to add one thing to support what you were saying, too, really quick, is that, you know, it is how much damage occurs before we feel it, right?
Yeah.
Because, for instance, on kidneys, well, you can give up a whole kidney to someone else and function just fine. So that right there would tell you you can lose 50% of your kidney function before you would even notice that you're having problems with your kidneys. So when someone say, well, I don't have problems now, it's like, well, you're going to lose 50% of whatever you had before you even notice. Do you want to do that? Anyways, that's the only thing I wanted to add because sometimes people don't realize how much, that just shows how hardy the body is. You got to really knock it down before you start to feel stuff. But when you start to feel stuff, you've got things really knocked down.
You really do. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of indicators long before we get really sick that are showing us that we're going in the wrong direction. We just don't know how to evaluate them. And we don't have the awareness that we should be correcting things at the first indicator that something's going wrong. We just, as a society, we just don't know to do that. And I know for myself that having gone through the ordeal of having to recover from being poisoned, and I'll just call it that because that's what it is, I don't want to go through that again. I don't want other people to have to go through that. I don't want to wait until my body is so damaged that I may not recover. And it just makes sense to me to be proactive, to make a choice and say, I'm going to do the thing that leads to health instead of doing the thing that leads to illness. And to me, that's a very simple choice.
Right on. Absolutely. Well, now I'll tell you what to do for your teeth.
Well, actually, I was looking at the wrong number. Go ahead. We have some
Okay,
time.
Good. So one thing I want to say is that we've found that research shows people want to bleach their teeth, make their teeth lighter, and actually the hydrogen peroxide causes more mercury vapor to come off your fillings. So, again, to be proactive, if someone wants whiter teeth and they got mercury fillings, not a smart idea. And
well,
even with Dr. Bain, go ahead.
So what can I do to make my teeth more white? Because I don't have to worry about mercury.
That's right. You don't have to. So you can use the bleaching solutions that are out there, you know, that we have for whitening teeth. And it's just the people that have mercury fillings, that's going to cause mercury to come off their fillings faster. So those people, once I found that out, I mean, you still have a lot of people with mercury and they want to bleach their teeth. And not everybody is aware of all this. And so it's kind of a tough, you know, but it is also a way to now introduce them to the topic, which they may have not been ready to hear before, but now since they want to bleach their teeth and you're going to say this caused more mercury, it can help with the topic. But you shouldn't have to worry about that.
Okay, so I can have white
teeth. You can have white teeth, yeah.
Okay.
So the other thing then, as far as, you know, like The Secret, you've probably heard of The Secret. That's Dr. Behm's program to take care of your teeth, correct?
Yes, I've heard of it, but I'm sure my listeners haven't. So why don't
but
you tell
your listeners
them?
Haven't, that's correct. So that's where maybe you could fill in a gap here. But so one of the main things then, too, to take care of your teeth, you know, pH has everything to do, you know, the acidity or alkalinity of your mouth. So one of the things we're doing is we're testing the alkalinity, right? And so if someone's acid, you know, then if you're brushing with baking soda and hydrogen peroxide, and again, you shouldn't use the hydrogen peroxide if you have mercury fillings, and what Dr. Behm uses with his patients. At that time, we use it, natural dentistry, as colloidal silver. But brushing with that paste of hydrogen peroxide and baking soda is going to improve the oral environment of your gums and your oral tissues around there, and at the same time, reducing any acidity from bacteria that would actually contribute to decay. So that's an exceptional way to do that right there.
Good.
Another, okay. Of course, you want to floss with that also, because nothing cleans in between your teeth to get the plaque off. And again, really want to make the point of plaque is very, very, very sticky. It's these clumps, aggregates of bacteria, and it's kind of like, you know, if you're going to wash your hands for dinner, and I'm sure everybody's got clean hands right now, you wash your hands in about 10 seconds. But if you've been working in the garden or a guy's been working on his car, now you're going to have to really lavage with the soap and under the fingernails, and, you know, you may wash your hands for 5 minutes. Well, that's the analogy of the plaque. It's very sticky, like the grease in the hands, the dirt and everywhere. And so that's why you really have to floss and take the time to brush your teeth, you know, when they talk 5 minutes or whatever we put there, but to be thorough, because if you don't get the plaque off, if you have no plaque on your teeth, then you don't get the disease. So those are two of the really big ones. The other thing is that if you are grinding, clenching your teeth, putting a lot of load and trauma through them and your bites off, this is going to traumatize the teeth. Not only grind them down, but torque them in the socket. So you want to control that stress on your teeth. And since every tooth is actually connected to an organ with acupuncture and meridians and all this kind of thing, that stress, again, through your jaw and through your teeth and through your muscles, you want to kind of get a balance on that. So taking good oral care, like I just mentioned, there's some other good things like, essential oils are fantastic on the gum tissue. There's a dentist-made a toothpaste that we have in the office called Tooth and Gum Tooth Conic and Tooth and Gum Paste. And it doesn't have sodium lauryl sulfate. That's another thing to get out. I just want to make the point there's lots of toothpastes that don't have fluoride. And even this one, this toothpaste.
A lot of them, yeah.
A lot of them, yes.
And
even this one has I'm sorry?
You just need to read the label and look for the ones that don't have fluoride, don't have sodium lauryl sulfate. Just
yes.
Kind of skip the drugstore and the supermarket and go straight to the natural food store.
That's right. And really, too, it's even people looking. I've done this just for fun. Ladies looking for toothpaste. I said, hey, have you ever looked on those toothpaste for fluoride? And there was a woman, she had me a grandmother buying it for her kids. She goes, no, why? I go, well, just take a look and see what you think. The woman was shocked. She had never read that warning ever. She goes, what am I supposed to buy? I mean, she was shocked, upset. She realized she was getting that for kids and here if they swallowed it and it tastes like, and it's flavored like bubble gum.
Yeah.
So those are the ones that, you know, the pH of the environment, making sure you keep your oral hygiene, you know, the brushing, the flossing, and really even the dentist, you know, I mean, I try to tell people it's not, you should go twice a year. It's not like we're magical, but if something's going on, we can spot it sooner, so for it's something that's worse later. I mean, the things I see in patients time and time again, and if you think something's going on, then get a second opinion. You feel something, your doctor says it's fine, you're sure, you should have someone look at it, because I see patients, all new patients all the time. A guy today, I can't even believe, 68 years old, his teeth are a mess, and they're covered with crowns and root canals. He's been getting plenty of dental work, and his teeth are a wreck, right?
Yeah.
So it is being aware, just like you took complete responsibility for your body and went out and got yourself healthy. It's with the teeth, too. You do have to have this, you know, the proactiveness, like you just asked about it. I mean, if you're taking good care of them And then it's, you know, having a dentist who's really looking, and you feel he's looking, because, you know, a lot of them are nice guys. I talk to guys who are nice guys, and I'm trying to talk to them about the fluoride, and they're afraid. They don't know what to do. But they're nice guys. They like their patients, and they want to do a good job. But you want someone who's really conscientious about, you know, looking at your teeth.
Well, with that, we are running out of time, and I want to thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Youngman. I learned a lot, and I look forward to seeing you at Natural Dentistry in Clearwater. And
yes.
Give us your website, and so people can go there and learn more.
Well, definitely. I look forward to seeing you as a patient there. It's kind of a little perk we have here. But it's BEHM, B-E-H-M, naturaldentistry.com. is the website.
Okay.
And then the phone number is 727-446-6747.
Good. All right. Well,
lots of information on the website.
Yeah,
if people want to go to
that.
Lots of information. Really, you know, I've just joined Ray recently. He did a really good job on that. And you can really educate yourself with what's there.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me on. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Okay, so we're going to, that's the end of hour number 9, and we're going to take a short 3-minute break, and then I will be back with Larry Redalia to talk about toxic-free building and remodeling.